Welcome to The Bridge, a twice-weekly magazine show featuring local and regional stories. I'm Kathleen Morgane, your host for the show. This morning, we'll hear about retail pirates and secret shoppers. Last week, a federal judge in Seattle dismissed a lawsuit filed by Trader Joe's to shut down a small Canadian reseller of the company's products. Michael Hallett buys from stores in the U.S., including Portland, then resells them to Trader Joe's fans in Vancouver. We'll hear how Hallett does it and why. Also on the show, some local governments in Washington have adopted moratoriums on marijuana-based businesses within their jurisdictions, at least until state authorities are sure the in-state businesses won't run afoul of federal regulations. In Colorado, some prospective pot retailers fear local regulations could put a serious damper on their businesses before they even get started.
There's going to be plenty of money to be made in Boulder selling weed, and there's going to be lots of folks making millions of bucks kind of hand over fist doing it. And if you don't get in on round one, like, tough.
Ben Marcus reports on the evolving rules surrounding legal marijuana sales. This is Coast Community Radio. NPR News headlines are next. The time is 9:01. You're listening to The Bridge here on Coast Community Radio in top local and regional stories this morning. Nearly a week after launching, Oregon's Health Insurance Exchange has received more than 230,000 unique website visitors and 7,300 phone calls. But the website is still not able to finish enrolling applicants in coverage. Cover Oregon is an online marketplace where individuals and small businesses can shop for insurance, compare options, and find out whether they qualify for federal subsidies under the federal health care overhaul. The system has had trouble accurately determining whether people are eligible for subsidies, so officials are waiting until the issues are resolved before they allow people to enroll online. A spokesman said yesterday that Cover Oregon officials hope to have the website fully functional by the end of the month. The U.S. Department of Agriculture is issuing a public health alert for raw chicken packaged at three Foster Farms facilities in California after 278 people have fallen ill. The USDA says the strains of Salmonella Heidelberg are associated with chicken distributed to retail outlets in California, Oregon, and Washington. The Salmonella outbreak has spread to 18 states, though most of the illnesses have been reported in California. A spokesman for Foster Farms says no recall is in effect, and the infections were caused by eating undercooked or improperly handled chicken. The USDA has not directly linked the outbreak of illnesses to a specific product or production period. Cooking chicken to 165 degrees kills the Salmonella bacteria. At this week's meeting of the Astoria City Council, Astoria police officers Chris McNeary and Ryan Sisley were honored for their performance during the shooter incident at Astoria's Lamplighter Motel in February of 2012. Mayor Willis Van Dusen proclaimed Astoria as having the finest police department in the United States, then swore in two new officers, Corey Gehrig and Dan Conkey. Oregon State Police technicians who work with hazardous devices are warning people not to touch any marine markers found on the Oregon coast. The technicians recently were called to deal with three such markers in a week. They say it's not unusual to respond to one a month after the device washes ashore, but three in a week is very uncommon. The marine markers are used by military aircraft to mark floating locations. They contain white phosphorus, which burns in contact with air. Police say the devices may malfunction, but even if they function correctly, there is a chance that some white phosphorus might remain and might spontaneously ignite, causing serious injury. When Alejandra Wilson woke up and saw snow on her tent near Mount Adams, she knew she wasn't hiking out anytime soon. So the Portland woman, who had been hiking the Pacific Crest Trail, hunkered down and began rationing food, water, and fuel. She put a hot water bottle in her sleeping bag at night, but it was still so cold she sat up shivering. Meanwhile, searchers and a helicopter were looking for her. She saw the chopper one day but couldn't get its attention. She told the Oregonian she thought she might not make it, but on Saturday she woke to find the snow hard enough so that she could walk out. She's now home, where her father says he's proud of her for making sound decisions. You're listening to The Bridge here on Coast Community Radio. I'm Kathleen Morgane. Oregon's economy is growing at its historic average rate, according to a new report from the University of Oregon. Kristen Foden-Wenzel reports.
Manufacturing activity is bolstering the U of O's Index of Economic Indicators. Tim Dewey of the Economics Department says strength in manufacturing is pushing employment up and increasing the average number of hours that employees are working.
Manufacturing hours worked has been near its cycle highs, and that tends to show a need, I think, for future hiring. And so that should be a good source of activity going forward.
On the other hand, Dewey says, household spending is still restrained by elevated unemployment. These latest numbers reflect activity in August, well before the federal government shutdown. Dewey doesn't expect the shutdown to have a big effect on Oregon's economy unless it lasts for more than a couple of weeks. But a failure to deal with the nation's debt ceiling, he says, could significantly affect the economy. I'm Christian Foden-Wenzel reporting.
A school district in North Idaho is considering a plan to arm select teachers and staff with concealed handguns. The school board is asking for public comment at a meeting tonight in Sandpoint, Idaho. Correspondent Jessica Robinson has more.
In the wake of the Sandy Hook shooting last year, officials at the Lake Ponderay School District took a look at their own safety procedures. They discovered that in a similar situation, some of the rural schools in the district would have to wait as long as 20 minutes for police to arrive. Now the district is floating the idea of giving teachers the means to shoot back. Christina Maurer likes the idea. She's the mother of a kindergartner at Kootenai Elementary School.
I would feel a lot safer having my child in school and knowing that if somebody were to come in and start shooting, you know, they could be stopped instead of having to wait for the officers to come.
The proposal calls for screening, training, and arming one or two volunteer teachers or staff members per school. They would receive semi-automatic pistols equipped with a fingerprint recognition device. Gun control advocates and some teachers say putting guns in schools increases the risk of accidental shootings and can make children feel less safe. In Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, I'm Jessica Robinson.
Last week's special legislative session in Oregon concluded after passing a bill preventing local governments from regulating genetically modified organisms. In Washington, voters will decide in November whether some foods and beverages containing genetically engineered ingredients should be labeled. A record $17 million has been pumped into the campaign to defeat the measure, so far outspending proponents by nearly 4-1. Austin Jenkins reports on the progress of politics in the campaign for GMO labeling.
6 months ago, it's doubtful very many grocery shoppers in Washington had even heard the acronym GMO, much less could tell you what it stands for. Today,
do you know what GMO stands for?
Oh yeah, genetically modified, what's the O for?
Mary Lynn Thompson of Tenino, Washington, got most of it. The O stands for organism. I found Thompson loading groceries in the parking lot of a Fred Meyer. The battle over whether to require new labels on some of those foods now in her car trunk is all over the airwaves in Washington. From the Yes campaign,
we should know if the food we eat has been genetically engineered.
And from the No side,
its promoters claim it's about labeling food made with genetically engineered ingredients.
So why all the TV and radio spots and glossy mailers?
This is not just about what's going on in Washington state.
Todd Donovan is a political science professor at Western Washington University and an expert on ballot measures. He compares this GMO fight to a ballot measure campaign in 2010 to repeal a soda pop tax.
This reminds me of the beverage tax, and that you've got some really powerful, well-financed groups that don't want to see the idea spreading to other states, and they're probably willing to spend a ton of money here to play defense so they don't have to do this elsewhere.
The top funders of No on 522 are the National Grocery Manufacturers Association and seed and pesticide maker Monsanto. Neither provided someone for an interview, but on its website, Monsanto calls GMO food labeling a scare tactic designed to lead to a ban on genetically engineered foods. Locally, Washington's Biotechnology Association has come out against 522. Chris Rivera heads that organization. He's concerned GMO labeling could chill investment in this arena.
The long-term vision for the biotechnology industry is to heal, feed, and fuel the world. And, you know, the only way we're going to be able to take care of 9 billion people by 2050 is through biology and biotechnology.
So far, proponents of Initiative 522 have raised nearly $5 million, about a quarter of the opposition's war chest. That funding is coming from out-of-state companies like Dr. Bronner's Magic Soaps and groups like the Organic Consumers Association, where Catherine Paul is associate director. She says supporters of GMO labeling were actually galvanized by the failure last year of a similar measure in California. They think they have a better chance here in Washington.
Winning in Washington will show that the will is there, that the consumers, that the people are not going to give up on this. And it will send a strong message to Washington, D.C.
to pass, she hopes, a federal requirement that GMO foods be labeled. Back in the Fred Meyer parking lot, some shoppers already know how they'll vote on Initiative 522. Nancy Weiss is a nurse with organic milk in her shopping sack.
I'm totally in favor of labeling.
How come?
Well, I like to know that that's what's being done with the food that we're eating.
But Mike Hobbs views GMO labels as unnecessary.
I think that anytime we vote something like that, we just raise our own prices, and I think that that's, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
And then there are the shoppers who told me they're undecided and confused about Initiative 522. They're the ones both campaigns will be trying to persuade in the coming weeks. I'm Austin Jenkins in Olympia.
An initiative that did pass last year in Washington legalized the recreational use of marijuana. Some local governments have adopted moratoriums on marijuana-based businesses within their boundaries. In Colorado, the other state that legalized marijuana last year, local governments are also placing limits on pot shops in their localities. One of them is Boulder. What's surprising about that is that Boulder, Colorado, has a reputation for being marijuana-friendly. It has a thriving medical marijuana industry, and the recreational pot law there passed by 75%. Colorado Public Radio's Ben Marcus reports on Boulder's proposed city ordinance.
You don't have to fly to Florida for a taste of tropical weather. Just step into a marijuana grow operation. Hundreds of tall plants sit under amber lights as fans push humidified air into the room.
It's perpetually Fort Lauderdale in here.
Greg Goldston is the owner of Options Medical Center in Boulder. He says no city in Colorado manages medical marijuana better. It approves licenses promptly and thoroughly inspects every facility.
I think Boulder has presented itself as being an example of how you want to run a program, and to fix something that is not apparently broken doesn't make much sense to us.
Goldston is referring to a proposed city ordinance for recreational marijuana. It would restrict the size of grows. It would force marijuana operations to choose between medical sales and recreational sales, and it would enact new zoning restrictions. In short, Goldston says it would make running the business more costly and could put some out of business altogether. Like his grow we're standing in right now would violate the proposed ordinance because it has more than 1,000 plants.
We're very surprised. The system that they have in place right now is working great.
The current laws may work well for businesses, but according to Boulder's assistant city attorney, Kathy Haddock, they've created a nuisance, especially when it comes to smell.
And so we have lots of complaints about that, and we have found that businesses that have over 1,000 plants have not been successful in installing ventilation systems that don't impact the neighborhood.
Haddock has not released the number of complaints that the city has received. She's not concerned that the draft ordinance could leave some businesses out of the potentially lucrative recreational market, and that the city could miss out on that tax revenue. The recreational marijuana industry, she says, will be different from the medical side.
It is very much a public safety concern, especially with the children. And done right, it doesn't have to be a concern. But not done right, I think there will be a lot of collateral problems.
The marijuana industry claims as many as a third of medical shops in Boulder won't be allowed to sell recreational pot if this draft ordinance passes. That doesn't bother guys like Ben Court, sipping his Starbucks on the Pearl Street Mall. He's with the group Smart Approaches to Marijuana.
There's going to be plenty of money to be made in Boulder selling weed, and there's going to be lots of folks making millions of bucks kind of hand over fist doing it. And if you don't get in on round one, like, tough.
Court also worries about the impact on kids, and he applauds Boulder for taking a restrictive approach to recreational pot. Elsewhere on the mall, Boulder resident Paul Saffarito thinks the city council is right to approach recreational marijuana slowly, even though he supported legalization.
Due caution and circumspection, I think, is probably a reasonable approach at this point.
But like many others I talked to, Maruta Kalnins asked, what's the big deal? She says marijuana is no more dangerous than alcohol, and the dispensaries have been good neighbors. Though she doesn't smoke, she was just in one with a friend a couple of weeks ago.
But I loved it in there. I wandered around looking at all the pretty pipes and the things, and everything was very, oh, this was during the flood. It was one of the few places open. and it was lovely. There was nothing seedy about it.
She says not nearly as seedy as some liquor stores. The public is invited to comment on the draft proposal before city council votes a week from tonight. Ben Marcus, Colorado Public Radio News.
Still coming up, how a small-time retailer uses secret shoppers in Portland and Seattle to buy products from Trader Joe's stores, then resell them in Vancouver, Canada.
You know, as a person, I have rights to resell what I own, and it's just core fundamental law. And so what Trader Joe's is going to have to face up to is the fact they have a market in Canada, they should service it, and if they don't, I'm going to do it for them.
Michael Hallett, the proprietor of Pirate Joe's, prevailed against Trader Joe's in court last week. That story just after this weather break. Here's the National Weather Service forecast for the Lower Columbia Coastal Region today. Showers mainly before 5 this evening. High temperatures today in the mid-50s with west-northwest winds 9 to 14 miles per hour with gusts as high as 22 miles per hour. The chance of precipitation today 90%. Gordon McCraw, meteorologist and director of Tillamook Emergency Management, says we will continue with scattered showers today as a cold upper-level low-pressure trough continues to move over the area. With the coldest air over us today, we could see some small hail from the heavier showers along with some chilly, low temperatures falling into the mid-30s because of skies clearing up overnight, allowing for some additional radiational cooling. A ridge of high pressure over us tomorrow means sunny skies, dry east winds, and mild temperatures. But then Thursday, another weak front brings back a slight chance of rain, then rain showers into Friday. The models head off into different directions for the weekend, so for now, Gordon gives it a slight chance of showers under partly sunny skies during the day and mostly cloudy at night. Michael Hallett is the owner of Pirate Joe's, a small reselling store in Vancouver, Canada, that focuses on Trader Joe's brand products. He buys items from Trader Joe's stores up and down the I-5 corridor at full retail, then trucks them back across the border to stock his shelves. When Trader Joe's realized what Michael has been doing, they were not too pleased. But last week, a federal judge in Seattle dismissed a lawsuit filed by Trader Joe's to shut down the Canadian reseller. So how does a store like this operate? The pirate himself spoke to Ross Reynolds in Seattle.
You opened the store in Canada because you got acquainted with Trader Joe's in the Bay Area. You moved back. There's no Trader Joe's there.
You know, it happens to a lot of us up here. There's quite a few Americans and Canadians who have spent time in the United States who find themselves back in Vancouver, and they're like me, jonesing for their favorite Trader Joe's item, or just trying to get quality peanut butter. And so we end up with just a lot of people coming in asking for quite a wide variety of Trader Joe's lineup. And you know, we started with about 100 products a year and a half ago. We're almost at 1,000. For me, I just looked at it when I was, you know, spending this much time in Vancouver, and I thought, you know, Safeway just isn't going to cut it once you've had the Trader Joe's experience. So I just looked at this as an opportunity to provide a better way for Vancouverites to get their goodies.
Michael, is it all people who know about Trader Joe's from visiting the U.S., or are you creating a new group of people who go in because they've heard about it because your store is there?
Well, you know, we've opened in this very busy shopping district called, in Kitsilano, it's called 4th Avenue, or also known as Front Row. And so we're, you know, very close to Whole Foods and across the street from Safeway. So a lot of people are shopping, and they'll walk by, something will catch their eye. They don't know anything about Trader Joe's. We'll give them a sample and talk their ear off about how great Trader Joe's products are, and then they try one thing, and sure enough, very often they'll come back and they'll say something like, "Why is this the very best oat bran I've ever tasted?" And I'll say, "I have no idea."
Mike, you're in Portland, Oregon now, restocking your shop's inventory at Irate Joe's. But I know there's Trader Joe's closer to you in Canada. Why did you skip the one in Bellingham, skip the ones in Seattle, and go all the way down to Oregon?
Well, Bellingham, we call it the heat is on. I've been asked to not come back to most of the Trader Joe's in the Pacific Northwest. There's a few I just haven't gone into, and they haven't had the opportunity to tell me. I haven't heard that from corporate, so I've just been respectful and tried to come up with a different way to supply the store. That means I work with shoppers, people who go in there for me. The principle basically is we want to get in, shop like everyone else does. We're not going to raid any shelves. We're just getting a couple of things. You know, our list might be, 75 things. We'll get a couple, and then we'll move on to the next store, and we'll go as far as, well, we've been down to L.A., but that doesn't work out so well. It's a long trip. So right now we're just, doing Seattle and Portland. I've got a team out there right now in Portland. So if you're listening, Trader Joe's, be on the alert for, a nice couple shopping.
But you, Mike Callett, are a marked man. They've got your picture up in all the Trader Joe's and say, don't sell to this guy.
Yeah, they have, just on the store level. I mean, it was very cordial in Bellingham to start with. I was buying lots of stuff and they were pretty happy with the business. And then the word came down from corporate that, the business wasn't welcome. And I was already open, so I just kind of had to decide, was I going to quit or was I going to find a better way to to get the product. So far, so good. It's been a year and a half. The heat's been kind of turning on. It's been a little hotter out there since the lawsuit hit. But for a year, everyone knew what I was doing, and there's lots of people buying and reselling it on eBay and Amazon, and I'm sure, there's variations on what I'm doing somewhere out there.
I would have thought that if a Trader Joe's to open in Vancouver, you'd be distraught because there goes your business. But I've heard you quoted as saying you'd be delighted. You'd close the next day.
I really would. I would just absolutely embrace the idea of them coming to Vancouver. They should. They've set up shop in Bellingham, and the rationale, as it's been explained to me, and it makes sense, especially given, 40% of the business out of that store is to Canadians. I think it's higher. That's just the credit cards, as it was indicated in the pleadings in the lawsuit. They've created this market, and the rationale for opening in Bellingham was the Canadian business. So it just seems, a little bit lazy on their part. Like, just make the effort, do the labeling. If I can do it, they can do it. It's not that complicated. And if I can make rent, they can surely make rent. Now, I know that I hear this, and I haven't heard this from Trader Joe's. They're a black box. They don't really pick up the phone, so I haven't been able to get a straight answer. But the indication is that if the alcohol sales laws in Canada changed and the controlled cheese industry changed, Trader Joe's would probably be a little more interested in opening up there. So, maybe I've got some lobbying work to do to get some laws to be changed up in Vancouver, and maybe they'll come up then.
You're sending secret shoppers into Trader Joe's. Do you think Trader Joe's is sending secret shoppers into Irate Joe's, your store, to see how it's going?
Yeah, we got two guys came in that didn't look like they were from around Kitsilano. And one guy, he looked like a retired boxer. His nose was a little bit askew. And he was with a guy that you'd normally not see a retired boxer with. And that would be a very tall, pin-suited guy. And the two of them were standing there looking at the product. They weren't really shopping, and the store was full. And I turned and I said to them, are you guys from Trader Joe's at all? And the boxer looked at me and said, I'm not. And he pointed to the tall guy and he said, but he is. So we busted him, and we had a nice chat. And they said, maybe you want to call it, Pirate Moe's or something. So, the name is incidental. We've never really... I mean, when we were disguised as a Romanian bakery, and that was way back when we first opened, we took over an old Romanian bakery. We were called Transylvania Trading, and I was still threatened with a lawsuit. So it's never been about the name. It's really just Trader Joe's wanting to control the market, overreaching. A lot of companies do that. We find that all the time, that they're trying to run the show. And, as a person, I have rights to resell what I own, and it's just core fundamental law, and so what Trader Joe's is going to have to face up to is the fact they have a market in Canada. They should service it, and if they don't, I'm going to do it for them, and that's fair game, and I'm happy to work with them. Call me. I've got a great location for them. I'm happy to close the next day. I'll throw them a party. Come on up. We love you, Trader Joe's.
Michael Hallett runs Irate Joe's, used to be Pirate Joe's, where they resell Trader Joe's products.
That was KUOW's Ross Reynolds. That's all for today's edition of The Bridge. The Bridge airs Tuesday and Thursday mornings at 9. Thanks for listening this morning. We welcome your feedback on the show. Call us at 503-325-0010 or email to news1, that's N-E-W-S, then the numeral 1, at kmun.org. The Bridge is a production of Coast Community Radio.